You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Come on.
Joining me, a man who needs no introduction on this program. That's right. Born in San Diego, raised in Minnesota, now calls Texas his home. He's got more personalities than Sybil. Mike Musselman! Gunner, what's up? What are you doing? So give us, give us the weather report. The whole nation standing by as Texas got snow.
Cold, brother.
Got snow today. You guys just were like at 70, like at the, like, and then
yeah, we were at 82 or something like that. Now, shit, this morning it was like 22.
So you know what that means, El Nino, global warming, the end is near.
Yeah. Even though it's getting colder every year, that still accounts for global warming.
Exactly. You know, when we say global warming, we mean a whole lot of different things, okay? In fact,
yeah, the all-encompassing of the Earth is trying to get rid of its parasites. Us being the parasite.
Exactly. And pretty, yeah, nobody's going to be laughing when a big hole opens up in the sky and everything goes. The dogs go, the cats go, you go, we all go. As Earth restores.
I just hope that I'm around still to see that, man, to witness the end of mankind.
And what are you going to say? You're going to be, I told you so, as we all get sucked up through the hole. I told you, assholes, I told you.
No, I'm going to be that guy on that one. It was a movie called, whatever it was, The End of the World, when he's just standing on the beach, you know, watching the tidal wave come. This huge tsunami, and it just killed him. I was like, yes, I want to be that guy. Just accept it.
Oh.
And you know what? I'm going to be sitting there with a cigar, with a cup of coffee, and just nothing but a robe.
A robe? Who the hell wears a robe? Yeah. Do you have a robe?
Yeah, I want to get a robe like Hugh Hefner had a robe.
Like a Snuggie?
A Snuggie? No, a robe.
I thought you had a Snuggie. I thought you had a Red Sox Snuggie.
No, I have it's a onesie.
No. I get confused between the Snuggie and the onesie. Hold on. I had a question for you. Do you have a way that you make baked potatoes? My chef buddy just said, he says rub it in olive oil and then put kosher salt on the outside. And
well, that's what everybody should do. Well, I don't get it. That's like an everybody thing. Yeah.
Right. Do you have anything different that you do?
No.
Whoa, what do you got to choose?
No.
Why did
baked potatoes, we're not, baked potatoes kind of like, that's kid stuff.
Why are you being such a jackass?
Wash the potato.
Right.
Like you said, put it in oil, or bathe it in oil, and then put it on, and then what you do is you bake it until you can stab it with a fork.
There you have it.
You know, smoothly. Now, you can do twice-baked potatoes. Those are cool.
Tell us how you make your twice-baked potatoes.
Baked potato, scoop out, cut the potato in half, so you got just the skin, and then scoop out the stuff and then make, you know, I always make it with sour cream. You know, mix sour cream in there with a little bit of milk and butter. Yeah. That's money. And then you put it back in the potato, top it off with some bacon and some cheese, and then bake it until the cheese is kind of golden. And then, man, that thing is so good.
Okay.
So good, dude.
And it's not a whole lot of work either, right?
It's simple, dude.
So
twice baked potatoes is what you should always try and strive for. Cause,
ooh,
yeah,
I see,
you're
yeah.
just baking them, just a little longer, but man, the reward is just ridiculous.
So you bake them for the normal amount of time, right? That gets a potato dough,
yeah.
And then you scoop it out, then you prepare the innards, and then you put it back in, and then you put your toppings on, and then you throw it back in for, you know, how many minutes? 10 minutes, 15 minutes to warm it up?
Yeah.
How many minutes do you throw it back in for?
Until the cheese is golden brown.
Okay.
I do it until I melt the cheese.
Got it. Okay.
It should already still be hot.
All right. Now, I want to read you something.
Go ahead.
Don't push me. The Japanese, on December 7th, attacked Pearl Harbor, Guam, the Philippines, Malaysia, Singapore, and Hong Kong.
Right.
How did nobody notice that, like, there's no more ships in the harbor at all? How did nobody notice, like, yeah, there's, like, three different Japanese armies getting on boats and going places at the same time? How did our intelligence and the Brits not miss Pearl Harbor? Because you could actually defend Pearl Harbor. Yeah, these carriers and this battle group, they kind of snuck out at night, and they kind of, like, made their way unnoticed across the Pacific and hit Pearl Harbor. You could actually, yeah, okay. But when the whole Japanese army gets on boats and goes places, right, that's not easy
right.
to pull off. How did us and the Brits miss all of that?
That's the question. Yeah, that, my friend, is what they call the million-dollar question.
Could you imagine Roosevelt sitting there, right, with the Secretary of War? He brings his intel guy, right? And the whole day, Roosevelt's just staring at the intel guy going, "You're an idiot." And now he's getting one more. Sir, Pearl Harbor's been attacked. Sir, Guam's been attacked. Sir, Wake Island's been attacked. Brr. Sir, the Philippines have been attacked. Brr. Sir, Hong Kong has been attacked. Brr. Sir, Malaysia's been attacked. Brr. Sir, Singapore's been attacked. Like, I'm going to strangle the intel idiots here. How does nobody notice the whole Japanese army gets on boats and sails?
Weren't we breaking the code, too, at this time? We were already breaking the code, right?
Let's hope not. We broke...
Yeah, I think we did, man.
No.
Yeah, we were listening to them. We had indications that the fleet had left its anchorage, you know, the whole... Yeah. Because the Brits knew that this was, you know, that's the whole conspiracy, that the Brits knew this the whole time.
And
the whole conspiracy is they didn't say anything because they wanted the America in the war.
But that's like, how do you miss all of that? Come on. It's like,
oh,
but you know, correct, did the Germans didn't know that we were coming, did they, that day? On June 6th?
Right.
Because Rommel was in Germany. They didn't send him like, "Hey man, the Americans are coming. They're all loading up, and sure, in every port, they're getting on their boats." And then you know they had to have spies and shit.
Yeah, Uzbekistan. Yeah, they're not.
Yeah, it's like, how did like Rommel not get a message that says, "Hey, they're getting on their boats again. I don't want to interrupt Thanksgiving, but you might want to get here." German Thanksgiving's in June, just so everybody knows.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I got to, I played Roosevelt's whole, his, like, 8-minute speech to Congress on December 8th. And so you hear him tick down the list of places that got attacked on December 7th, and you're like, how the hell did we miss all of that? Right? I don't know, so.
Right.
Yeah, like, okay, hey, what's... December 2nd, what do our spies say in Japan? No, nothing. They say, like, the ports are quiet because there's no ships. There's no ships in them. What about any activity at the army bases? No, it looks like everybody's gone. What's the fusion center say about that? Nothing. They say that's okay. All right, hey, holiday weekend, nobody, no extra guard duty, that's good. Let's go party. So, I don't know, Mike. It just seems awfully odd that you miss it by that much.
Yeah, no shit, man.
Yeah, so, anyway. Because, again, Pearl Harbor, arguably, you know, that, you know, one battle group going to sea, you know, back then, and your PB planes that are flying long-range reconnaissance don't see them. I mean, that's moderately understandable. But the whole rest of the Pacific gets attacked and you don't know about it? Well done. Well done. All right. Email question. Hey, Mac, I got gun question for Gunner.
Oh, God, here we go.
I love these. Done. I need
some. Jump the chunk. Time for jump in the chunk. Wait a second. That makes me the chunk.
Okay, yeah, you are the chump, but you never accept your fate as the chump. I need to have some gun music. I don't know. What was the entrance? Do you remember the show The Rifleman with Chuck Connors?
No, you should do the clip, the song clip from Pulp Fiction. Say what one more time? What country are you from? What? There ain't no country named what? What are they speaking? What? What? Say what one more time?
Okay, hold on. Here's the Rifleman intro. We'll see if this is appropriate.
The Rifleman.
Yeah. Do you remember that? He heard Chuck Connors walking down the street. And he's got that lever. He's got that lever action rifle. And he just cranks off all those rounds. And then he's staring at the camera as it pans to him. And he spins the rifle as he cocks it. So, I don't know. That's a pretty good one, Mike. Okay, here's the question. I think I heard earlier this week you guys talking about ammunition. And I'm not sure if you guys discussed it, but I've got a serious question for you. For home protection, when you all might not be in the same room, is there any such thing as safe ammunition for your home? Or is it simply your awareness as the shooter of who might be in adjacent rooms and taking the appropriate action? Mike, safe ammunition for a home. And cover pistol. I don't know that rifle's appropriate, but shotgun. A lot of people use shotguns.
So, yeah, you don't want to use double-aught buck. That stuff's going to go right through walls and stuff. And you can get your hand on frangible ammunition.
What?
Frangible.
Spell it.
Frangible.
Don't yell at me.
Frange.
F-R-A-N-G.
Frangible.
I-B-L. Frangible ammunition. What is frangible ammo and how is it used? Okay, so explain to me what frangible ammunition is now that I see it.
What, you can't see it?
No, frangible bullet. Frangible bullets are intended to disintegrate into tiny particles upon target impact to minimize their penetration of other objects. Is that what I want in my house?
Yeah.
So what's it do when I shoot a bad guy?
It'll still hurt the shit. I mean, if you still shoot a solid object, it's going to disintegrate into a bunch of little pieces in his body. It's going to hurt like shit, I bet.
Wow. And so, but if it hits a wall, it probably isn't going through.
It's not going to go through. Not going to go through your walls. Your house.
Wow. Most frangible bullets are subject to brittle failure upon striking a hard target. This mechanism has been used to minimize the tendency of malleable lead and copper bullets to ricochet from hard targets as large cohesive particles. Brittle failure may occur at subsonic velocity. Attempting to crimp a brittle frangible bullet into a cartridge case may break the bullet. Brittle frangible bullets may break during the self-loading cycle of a semi-automatic firearm. And those fired from revolvers often break as the bullet encounters the barrel, forcing cone after leaving the cylinder.
Yeah, they're best Yeah, get them for semi-automatics. They're best for it.
Okay, so they have frangible bullets made for semi-automatics.
Yeah, and for rifles, too.
Wow. How about that, man? Didn't know that. I love that. Frangible bullets. The, all right. Here's another email. Gun talk. I love it. Are we going to talk about stopping power today?
There's no such thing, so we can't talk about it.
The last time the gunner talked about stopping power, it was his most eloquent treatment of the subject. I just wanted to take a second and congratulate him. As much as we all might want to ridicule it, it is something that is discussed ad nauseum among shooters. And Mike was absolutely right. There is a romantic lore about the .45 that is unbeatable. No matter what you tell those guys, they are welded to the .45. It is amazing. Absolutely,
yeah.
Positively amazing.
Yeah, you can't tell them anything, man. They just, it's like a liberal, it's like having a conversation why Hillary Clinton's corrupt with the extreme left-wing liberal.
Yeah. That
conversation. Meltdown.
That conversation's going nowhere.
Yeah, don't even try it.
Okay.
So same thing. Don't have that discussion with a guy who owns, 2745. That, my friend, is what we talked about. If you start going down the road of arguing with an idiot, you, my friend, have just become the bigger idiot.
All right. Here's another email question. Do either one of you think there's anything wrong with asking a female or male member of your staff to be your surrogate, to be the surrogate mother of your child? Well, I think it depends how you ask them.
Is it wrong? I would say it falls in the category of ethics.
Maybe. Ethically, I say maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. It depends how you ask them.
Okay.
It depends how you ask
them. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so if I...
General Nicholson, I could see this. General Nicholson walking up to some female Lance Corporal in the COC and saying, "Hey, you got a minute? Yeah, what's up, sir? I was wondering, if you would like to be a surrogate." Stop right there. I mean, are you serious?
Well, no, that would be clearly... okay, so I would just say this. If you're in a bar, right, and you've had a few drinks, and you look at somebody and say, "Hey, how'd you like to be the surrogate? My wife and I can't conceive." I think that's inappropriate. But I think if you're just in the workplace and you walk in and say, I have an announcement to make. My wife and I are unable to conceive. She has fertility issues. We're looking for somebody to be the surrogate mother, and it pays well. And so anybody who's interested.
She's got to be hot and have a good body. That's where you can get them. That's not. Is that the line? Is that just cross it?
Yeah, you just crossed the line there. I'm really surprised. But, you can't do that. You can't go there. But, see, here's the deal. We're not talking about, I guess I don't have all the details, to be honest with you. We're not talking about just.
There's a $1,000 gift card from Victoria's Secret in on this deal.
Yeah, that's wrong. No, that's unacceptable. So what we're not just talking about that it's an in vitro baby and you're going to carry it. We're talking about you're going to donate the egg too and carry it, and that somebody has to impregnate somebody, yes?
That's where the Motel 6 comes into play.
Yeah. Yeah,
with the Journey music in the background.
Yeah, you have to be really careful about that one when you offer that up in the workplace. It really depends on the delivery. You got to be kidding me. This guy.
You like Journey? That's what you say. You like Journey?
This guy is a congressman, right? And he's asking women you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of George Costanza, right? Was that wrong? Was that wrong of me to do?
Anywho.
Oh, Journey. Yeah. Cue the music, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he resigned last night. I can't remember his name, but he resigned last night. Supposedly, as many as 40 members of Congress face some type of sexual harassment allegation right now. That's what my sources tell me. So this thing's not going away anytime soon, and whatnot. So anyway, another gun question. I vote for a better quality rendition of the Rifleman. I like that quick gunfire, and I always like the way he slammed that thing around as he rotated the chamber open. Pretty macho little piece of gun work by Chuck Connors, who was an actual baseball player in real life before he became an actor. That's true. Played for the Cubs.
Right.
Yeah, played for the Cubs. My question is, I do have a lever action rifle. And
yep.
Is there a better place that Mike knows of to find parts for weapons? I look online, but sometimes I'm leery of dealing with different manufacturers. Is there any advice that he would have for me? As it is a bit of an antique. It's been handed down from my great-great-grandfather. Mike? Doesn't say who manufactured.
What's that?
He doesn't say who manufactured the rifle.
Well, it's probably a Winchester. If it's worth collecting, it's got to be a Winchester.
Ooh, okay.
What I would tell you, there are some, you know, you can go through Winchester's. They actually have a separate department that deals with those type of weapon systems. Or, you know, I'd just tell you, if it's really that, you know, you really want to follow up on some, email the show. I'll get your email there and I'll answer you and I'll send you a bunch of, sites that
Ooh.
You can actually use.
Hey, can we get Wade back on?
Yeah, anytime. Why?
I wanna have a discussion with you and he about the impact of MARSOC and on the number of sergeants in the FMF. And what do we call the FMF now? The fleet?
Yeah.
Do we?
Just the fleet?
The fleet. Do we have enough sergeants in the fleet?
Show.
Do they get in the show?
Show.
Do they get enough training? I'd be curious to hear both your thoughts on that. Because, you know, the job of a sergeant gets bigger and bigger. By virtue of the stuff that we stuff into squads and things like that. Yet I don't know that we give them the technical expertise before they get there, that they need. So I'd be curious to hear both your thoughts on that. I read a couple articles about the effect of MARSOC on the.
Oh, it's huge, man.
And you told me, I want to say last week, you said, yeah, it's not like we didn't see this coming. The bill had to be paid though. And so you're losing, you know, arguably, some of your best and brightest that want to go, work in MARSOC. And that has to have an impact on the rest of the force. So.
Right.
So interesting. But yeah, can you see if you can get Wade and we'll let you guys, we'll see how smart, we'll see who's smarter, you or Wade.
Oh, it's Wade.
You think so? You're pretty smart.
Only when I want to be.
I know. You don't act like you're smart, but then all of a sudden you're like, blah, 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 blah. You're like, ooh.
When it benefits me, yeah, I will act smart. But I like to act dumb, because then nothing's expected of a dumb person.
Yeah, and then when it comes out of left field, it's always wonderful.
Yeah.
It's always a wonderful.
It just resonates with people. They're like, man.
Who is that guy? But it's always wonderful.
That guy,
it's always wonderful to
that
watch
guy
too.
So dumb, but he's actually really smart.
Oh my God! We're gonna do more gun questions. Mac, back to modular stocks again. I was looking in a gun store recently, and I recalled the conversation that you and Gunnard had. I had never actually seen one. I am totally blown away by what you can do with the stock now. Previously, to go zero a weapon, the eye relief thing, all of that now can be accounted for by the stock in a much more natural position for the shooter. I was absolutely astounded. I am concerned with the cosmetics, though. It looks a little bit like RoboCop stuff. Is there a balance between tradition and modular in terms of a manufacturer? Or do I have to accept RoboCop on my weapon?
Yeah.
I think you have to accept RoboCop.
Yeah.
You can't do it to your M1, okay? It's like, you just, come on. First of all, it wouldn't work. Or maybe it would. I'm sure, well, they probably do produce a stock for the M1. But come on. Things that are works of art. Yeah, it's like, let's put a 3D nose on the Mona Lisa. Okay, come on. We're not doing that.
Right.
So what do you think?
Yeah, modular stock's way to go. You've got to do it.
But what about classic weapons? You can't take a beautiful weapon and turn it into a piece of garbage.
No, you don't. No. That, my friend, is the Bushido violation. Don't take a gun and buy this modular stock that fits into it and take that look away. But what I'm talking about is, guns that should be that.
Should be modular.
I mean, yeah.
So would you buy a separate weapon and then begin to do the whole modular thing with it, knowing that you're going to be able to trick it out and do some fun stuff with it, as opposed to messing with something you might already have in your inventory that has a more traditional look? That's what I would do.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
All right, here's another interesting little question. I'm interested in starting an indoor gun range. Does the gunner know if the requirements in most counties are really over the top relative to doing that? I live in Wisconsin, so we're indoors for a fair amount of the year. And if I could make it cash flow during those years, I would shut it down in other months, or at least limit the hours and limit my costs. Does he know if the requirements relative to the shooting range itself are pretty substantial? Yeah, do you know anything about indoor ranges?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, you really got to look at the laws, the OSHA, because there's going to be a lot of regulations that you're going to have to follow as far as even the national, the federal stuff, the state, the local, the city, the county. I mean, everybody's going to tell you how to do this. And you got to do, the most critical piece is the venting, the air, the filtration system. Because every time you shoot that, you're going to get that lead dust build up. So you got to have a way to scrub that air clean. I mean, that's a huge thing, man. It's something that's not just as simple as, hey, I got a building, I'm going to go put some targets in it.
You know, it's funny. The first thing you mentioned is ventilation. Here I'm waiting for you to talk about ricochets and, hey, the ceiling's got to be.
Oh, ricochets, that's the easy shit, man. Seriously, that's the easy stuff. The hard job is, again, trying to figure out the whole ventilation system. And then, after you get that, the next hardest problem to solve is the lead abatement. What are you doing with the lead? How are you capturing the lead?
Wow.
And then, making sure all that, and then the hazard is, I mean, it's a hazardous material. So you got to collect it as such. So it's a long process, man. You just can't sweep up the lead and throw it in the garbage. And that's not cheap.
Wow. You know what, Mike? It made me think of, I don't know what made me, how I read it or what, but it might have been doing Today in History one day for some reason. when I read about the Holland Tunnel was open, and I read about it, and I read about the air system in the Holland Tunnel, and it is it replenishes the air in the tunnel like every 20 seconds. That's how robust the ventilation system is in the Holland Tunnel, and it was opened in 1920, I think. And so the towers that you see on the Holland Tunnel, are ventilation towers. That's what those things are, and it's just amazing when
what into that?
Yeah, when you think of this system. And the most significant thing they dealt with in the construction of the tunnel was the ventilation system. At the time of its construction,
usually,
underwater tunnels were well-established part of civil engineering, but no vehicular tunnel had ever been built. The tunnel hurdle was the ventilation required to evacuate the carbon monoxide emissions, which would otherwise asphyxiate drivers. There are four ventilation towers serving the tunnels, designed by a Norwegian architect, Erling Ure. Thomas Edison had contended it was impossible to ventilate a tunnel with the volume of traffic envisioned for the Holland Tunnel. Previous tunnels had been ventilated longitudinally. Engineer Ole Singstad pioneered a system of ventilating the tunnel transversely, and it talks about what they had to do to ventilate it. But it's amazing. They turn over the air in that tunnel every 15 seconds. That's huge.
Right. Yeah, like you said, it's usually the easiest thing to figure out in those types of situations is what you're billing it for, like in that case, the Holland Tunnel, the train stuff. So, the hardest thing to do is the stuff that you least expect, like you said, the ventilation.
Wow, amazing. So if you had an indoor shooting range, what is on the walls? I mean, because you have to limit ricochets, right? I mean, it's just not concrete, is it?
Well, it's a special type of material. You can do... I'm not quite sure like what they're using right now, but you can do it's like a vulcanized rubber matting that when something strikes it, you want to rapidly decelerate the round. That's the trick, so the quickest way you can decelerate the round is slow it down. And so that vulcanized rubber matting, so if it hits the wall, hits the ceiling, you have baffling systems that will contain keep the ricochet from coming back at you.
Right.
That's the other thing, so you don't want to come back at the shooter.
Okay,
right?
So the bottom line is it's not going to be your basic concrete box. The ceiling's got to be treated. The walls have to be treated. The ventilation system.
Yeah, bullet trap. How are you trapping? People are going to say, well, I just throw a bunch of rubber in the corner and we shoot into that. Sometimes it's best to pay up front than pay later, one of those situations. Because, buy the more expensive bullet trap systems, the deceleration chambers that trap the bullet, and they like a spiral. So it decelerates the bullet, keeps it intact from actually shattering and then turning into a dust. Then you got to meter and monitor it. You have to have tests done. I mean, there's a lot of stuff involved.
Interesting, because
And then noise abatement.
How do you abate the noise?
You got to look at the noise ordinance. Yeah.
Oh, you
and
mean?
You're going to put monitoring stations outside your building and register the stuff and. If it meets, if it's got to pass a certain threshold as far as noise abatement, the amount of decibels escaping the building, and if it goes past that, then you're spending more money to fix it.
Wow. And will those sensors be outside there? Like that's just the way it'll be built.
Yeah, they
they'll keep them there.
Sensors. And if they don't, you should.
Right.
You need to have that empirical data that goes back. So if the city or the people come back, you know, after a while and say, I can't sleep at night. This is so loud. I want to sue you for, you know, my loss of sleep, and that's $23 million. Well, you better have those tests done.
You could sue somebody for not being able to sleep for $23 million?
Shit, yeah. Well, I don't know for that much, but shit, you could sue anybody for anything these days. But one of the things that's going to go far is the fact that you yourself did this, and you did it kind of carelessly, you know?
I know, but I don't sleep through the night anymore. Like, can I sue somebody for that? Like, nobody told me I won't be able to sleep.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd find somebody.
I should do that.
You should.
I should get a good...
I would if I was you.
I should get a good lawyer, and I should sue somebody. Have you ever sued anybody in your life?
No.
Neither have I. I just want to...
No one's ever been worth it.
Now that I'm 60, I think I should sue somebody. I think that should be in my, like, repertoire. Like, yeah, I've sued somebody. Oh, really? Who'd you sue? I don't know.
I don't think I've ever taken anybody to even, like, small claims court.
Yeah, I've never done that either.
Man, I gotta step up too.
Yeah, you gotta step it up. You're like doofus wandering around Texas. Like, I've never done anything. Get it together, Mike. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna go sue somebody.
I'm gonna go sue somebody. Another gun question. Can we go back to pistols? I am learning how to shoot. My brother-in-law is teaching me. He's teaching me Weaver stance stuff. I'm really confused about the whole pull.
Weaver.
I'm really confused about the whole push-pull thing. Can the gunner give me any advice relative to shooting? All right, Mike.
My first instinct is, well, that's what your brother-in-law's for. Why are you asking me?
Obviously, they're not satisfied with the instruction they're getting.
Well, then find somebody else. If he's not explaining the simple concept of push and pull, you're pushing with your firing hand, you're pulling with your support hand, you're pulling back to you and pushing out, not the sense of that you're exerting all this energy, your pistol, you're like trying to fight. But that's the concept you want to have. You're slightly pulling back with one hand and pushing forward a little bit, so you kind of find this even temperament of resistance back and forth so the pistol's stable.
That's a pretty good description of it.
But, yeah, my question is, well, my situation would be come on, find somebody else.
Yeah, it's a brother-in-law, come on.
Yeah. He's probably a cop, too, trying not loud.
Well, cops should know how to shoot, right?
Well, not even going to go there.
Oh, really? We're not?
Congressmen should also do their job.
Ooh, why?
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, without a doubt.
Yeah. Why? So there's a lot of people should do a lot of things. And I say that kind of, you know, but most of the cops that I know can shoot fairly well. But your average guy, you know, again, look at the time that you spent. And then ask yourself, do you really think you're a professional with, you know, 12 hours a year invested in something, 20 hours a year?
I think the answer to that is no. What would you say, give me a threshold where, let's just take you for example. So you're the division gunner, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're doing this professionally. How much are you shooting in a given month?
When I was in?
Yes.
On a given month? How about a week?
Oh, okay, a week. How often? How much would you shoot?
I would shoot anywhere, like low end, 10 hours, high end, 20 to 30 hours.
A week?
Yeah, I'd get in, you know, maybe on some days. Well, I mean, so that's why I say it averaged out, because there were some days I dedicated nothing but shooting. So like a whole day of shooting.
All right, so that's
10 hours, 12 hours. On others, it was just a couple hours here and there, but I did that over, you know, every day. And then when I couldn't shoot, I was still rehearsing stuff, drawing from the holster, doing reloads, the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that gives everybody some kind of idea. If you're going to instruct, if you're going to wear a title like gunner, the level of proficiency that we're talking about.
Right.
Now, how much of that would be professional on Marine Corps time, and with Marine Corps weapons, how much of that would be your personal time with your personal weapons?
I don't know. It depended on the month, really. Most of it was Marine Corps time. But, I mean, that's a hard one, because, like I said, depending on the situation. There were times where, you know, I shot just as much with my own, or vice versa. It depended on what I was doing. Now, it was different. Like, when I started up, you know, we started up the three-gun team at Quantico,
yeah,
and weapons training time.
Right.
Shit, we were shooting, you know, 60, like 50 to 60 hours a week.
Wow. Holy smokes.
Oh, thousands around a week. Yeah. We were going.
Here's an interesting email. Mac, does it bother you when somebody burns the American flag? It depends who burns it. Okay, if Americans burn it, that bothers me. If like Arab people burn it, it's like, come on, is that all you guys got to do? Is that all you guys got? Go, come on, find a better, you know, trick to get our attention than that. You guys have been
yeah,
doing that forever. It's so tired and played out. But if an American does it, it registers deeper for me, because Americans aren't supposed to do that. I don't like that. So how about you, Mike?
Same. If it's a foreigner doing it, it's just whatever. You know, come on, idiot. Ooh, really, really good.
Exactly.
But if an American doing it, for me, it's unforgivable.
Yeah, I don't, like I said, like, yeah, you have the right to do that, but if you do, though, so if you do it near me, like, we're going to have.
I have the right to also punch you in the face.
Yeah, we're going to have a function.
I'm going to have my freedom of expression, and you're going to feel pain.
Right. Right. The, but the most famous, well, not the most famous, but, you know, you go back to Rick Monday, a Marine reservist playing center field for the Cubs, running out, warming up, at Dodger Stadium, and two guys jump on the field and they're going to light an American flag on fire. And, when I was a little kid, my dad was a coach for the Oakland A's. Rick Monday played center field for them. And he used to have the hottest girlfriends. Unbelievable. I was like 11. I was like, whoa, check that out. But he's a good dude. And, but they would go down. There was pictures in the yearbook, you know, that you could buy the yearbook at the stadium. Of the A's players at the, Alameda Naval Hospital. You know, having their pictures taken with Marines that had been wounded in Vietnam, 1968. And, you know, and so the video, there's a lot to the video. He's a Marine reservist, you know, and I interviewed him once about it. And he said, I looked, and at first I didn't know what they were doing. And then I heard Lasorda yelling, And Tommy Lasorda was a third base coach of the Dodgers. And I saw that it was a flag. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. He said, all I did was ran and grabbed the flag. And they weren't going to do that. He said, after all the guys I've seen and my time in the Marine Corps, no way that was going to happen. But
I'm just glad it's never been done in front of me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll call 911 on myself.
Hello?
I'm serious.
This is 911. Yeah, this is Mike Musselman.
Yeah, state emergency. Yeah, 911, state emergency. Actually, I don't have an emergency. The person I'm going to confront has got an emergency. So you might as well EMS right now. No reason to send police because I'll stop at the police. I'll stop in and turn myself in later. But, yeah. Well, sir, what are you talking about? Oh, someone's burning a flag in front of me. I'm just about ready to go beat the shit out of him. So he's definitely going to need EMS. If you could send him right now, that'd be great.
Yeah, figure it out.
Think about that. They submit that into, you know, Exhibit A at your trial. I mean, how do you counter that, you know? Your Honor, this tape is going to show that my client was looking out for the safety and welfare of the person you just beat the shit out of. Right?
No, without a doubt, man. It's gonna show you as a caring, giving person.
It's compassionate. Now now you cross the line with me. You know, we all got you cross the line. You habitual line crosser. You're gonna get stopped.
Yeah, flag burning.
Yeah, we'll do it somewhere else.
Yeah, like I've seen it the last couple of days on TV in the West Bank and Gaza as they're pissed.
Stupid games, man. You're gonna win stupid prizes, right?
Yeah, but you know,
What did you punch me in the face?
What? You know what I think?
Are you serious? We're asking this question. Okay.
One of the things I would think about, you know, since the 60s is, you know, can you imagine if you had, you know, fought on, pick anyone, on Peleliu, right? And if you haven't read With the Old Breed, read that. But, and you had those experiences, and now you're, by the time the 60s get here, let's just say you were 20 in 1944, and now by the time the 60s get here, you're 20 years older, so now you're 44, and you're at a baseball game, and people decide that they're not going to stand up for the national anthem, and you've got Peleliu rolling around inside of you. How did those guys not just beat the shit out of people?
Yeah, someone's getting beat, right?
Yeah, because I'm gonna flip out here, because I've got Peleliu inside of me. You know, and that's not a good thing. I've got Iwo Jima. I've got Saipan. I've got Cape Gloucester. I've got Guadalcanal rolling inside of me. And then after I went to Guadalcanal, I went to Saipan.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you might want to stand up to the national anthem, or I'm going to split your head open with this hot dog I have in my hand. Yeah, I don't know. I wondered, those guys, God bless them for the way they handled that kind of stuff, because the 60s, man, that stuff was crazy. So... anyway,
it was rampant.
Yeah. But I wondered, how did their heads not explode? All right, any big plans for the weekend? You got all your Christmas lights up? Talk to me.
Yeah, we got all that stuff up.
Wow. What kind of lights? Do you have all one color, the kind of icicle things, or do you have multicolored old-fashioned? How do you roll on Christmas?
Just straight up, just the... got the big wreath with the lit, it's lit wreath. Got the door frame, like the doorway entrances, got the fake, pine cones and the pine needles and, you know, the holly, whatever that thing is, right?
All right. What about the outdoor lights? What kind of outdoor lights you got?
Just like a white bulb, LED bulbs.
White LED bulb, single strand around the gutters or what?
Yeah, around the whole front of the house.
All right, you're going to have to send me a picture. I need to see.
Okay.
All right. So no big plans. You're on autopilot from here on in.
Till Christmas?
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows what the I know the mother-in-law's coming into town.
Oh, really? Do you like your mother-in-law?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. The
It's, you know why?
Why?
Because my wife, when she shows up, she starts kind of driving my wife crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fun to watch because they're so much alike. And I look at, and I'm sitting there smiling, and then later on she'll go, "What was so damn funny?" And I'm like, "Oh, nothing, dear." She's like, "No, something was funny." And I said, "That's the way you are with Megan." "No, I'm not." "Yes, it's exactly the way you are." And now your mom comes down, and then now you're like, "Ah," and then you wonder why Megan goes, "Ah, that's why." And then, of course, it's total denial. I'm not that way. Sure. Continue to believe that. That's fun to watch. You know, like, oh, man, my wife's getting spun up.
You know what? It is always fun to watch somebody else spin up.
Oh, dude, it's a 10-minute conversation between both of them. Like, if my mother-in-law would say, like, do you want a glass of wine? And my wife will say, sure. And then this is where it goes. And then I put the TV on mute and lean back and watch. Because this is what you hear. Okay, so what kind do you want? Red or white or what? Oh, it doesn't matter. Go ahead and pick. Oh, no, no, it's your wine. Go ahead. You tell me what you want. Oh, no. I mean, I'm in the mood for anything. Oh, yeah, me too. I'm in the mood for anything. So just tell me what you want. Oh, whatever you pick. Dude, that's 5 minutes of this. And finally, I'm like, red. Just pick a red. Would you like the Merlot or would you like it? For crying out loud. Here. Now you got a drink. That's when I just opened it. And then my wife. Well, I didn't want a tab. Like, oh.
Too bad. That's what you're getting.
Oh, dude, that stuff drives me absolutely batshit crazy. What do you guys want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do?
No, let me just tell you.
Whatever you feel like.
The, seeing somebody spin up is one of my favorite things in life. Absolutely, positively, one of the most favorite things. Like if like we're in
most enjoyable thing.
I absolutely love it. Like if I walked in someplace and I'd say, "What's going on?" They're like, "Oh, Gunner's on the warpath." I'd be like, first question, "Where is he?" "Oh, I think he's over there." I'm like, where'd Major Mac go? He went looking for the Gunner. And then you just walk in and you say, "Hey, what's going on?" Like, "Aah." And then you just start asking the questions. "Well, why is that making you mad?" "Oh," and it's just the best. It's just to be.
It's fun.
It is. It is the absolute best to see somebody just going, just losing their mind over something. And then you start asking them questions. And then they just get more mad. And it's just, you talk about the simple fun of being together in a very bad place. Those are like days you don't forget. Hey, do you remember the day when the Gunner was losing his mind about fire extinguishers, blah, blah, blah? Oh my God, are you kidding me? That was the funny, now, and so you can see the humor in when Mike went on his rampage in Kuwait, and we heard about it in Afghanistan. He did what? Yeah, check it out. He was saying shit like, "Do you know who the fuck I am?" And then you're like, "You know what? I don't know how this story wound up, but this is awesome." If he was saying that shit, he was out of his mind, pissed off at somebody about something.
Oh, it, yeah, man. I was pissed.
So we might have to wait a month for the story, but trust us. It's going to be a great story, okay? It's going to be absolute. And it was. He walked in, like, all of a sudden, you know, so guys leave for about a month, right? So they're part of your family, and then, you know, they're gone. So, like, your family's deficient. And,
right.
And so then all of a sudden one day, you know, you may, like, I tended to know who was coming in because Rudy was sitting in front of me, and he'd be like, "Hey, man, Mike's on this, on this lift coming out of Leatherneck. You're like, oh. So then all of a sudden you hear the door open up. What's up, boys? And you're like, turn around, like, tell us a story about Kuwait. Like, and then you hear the funniest damn story you've ever heard in your life. And you have, like, what, 30 Marines sitting there just laughing their ass off. It's awesome stuff. So
I didn't have a great time.
But it's funny, though. Spooling a national treasure. All right, man, have a great weekend.
All right, sounds good, man.
Yeah, thanks for all the gun talk.
I'm at the Petroleum Club meeting Ron around. So.
You know what? I love the Petroleum Club, by the way. Wait, what city is the Petroleum Club in?
It's in Granbury.
In Granbury?
Yeah. I'll send you a picture of that. I'll send you a picture of it.
All right, man. Have a good weekend. Tell the boys I said hey.
All right, I will.
All right. See you, Mike.
Yeah, bye.
Let me just tell you this. A few people can spool like him. And the reason why a few people can spool like him is because in the middle of spooling, he's really funny. Yeah. He's really funny. And so I can't find a picture of the Petroleum Club in Granbury, Texas. So he'll be going off, and then he's, like, saying funny things in the middle of it about people, their physical appearance. Just stuff that will make you piss your pants. Yeah. It's like this machine gun. And just these things are coming out, and they're funny. And then somebody else walks up and says something stupid, and then he goes off on that. Trust me, if you've ever been around for it, it is absolutely hilarious. And again, we heard about his tirade in Kuwait. Do you know who I am? Oh, my God. And we had a big discussion, like, how many people can pull that one off? Not too many. He's one of them, though. And because Mike, he was seriously pissed. He wanted to know why the colonel in charge, you know, during working hours couldn't be out there and greet the people coming through. Because that's what, you know, that's what her command did. Could have been him. Yeah. The gunner on a rampage. Awesome. All right, have a great weekend. Make sure you get your Christmas lights up. I think this weekend is the deadline. You got to have them up by then. If you don't have them up by then I think you're in violation of some Christmas rule someplace. My thanks to the All Marine Radio head chef, Kim Holmes. Basic baked potato, how to make a great one. And I think some, you know, different ways, you know, if you like to grill, how to do fish appropriately. And again, a lot of people, you know, like to, you know, they want to flip it when I don't think you have to. And then it falls apart and then it gets stupid and lame and all the rest of it. So have a great weekend on a Friday. All Marine Radio, over and out.